Imagine a substance so incomprehensibly powerful that it doesn't just alter your reality.
Right.
It completely deletes the you that is experiencing that reality.
It's terrifying, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, no immersive visual landscapes, no physical body, no memories, really.
Just an instantaneous blinding white void.
Exactly. And yet, this terrifying, like, 15-minute chemical skydive is currently the most promising cure for severe depression the medical world has ever seen.
It really is.
So, welcome to the deep dive.
It sounds like pure science fiction, I know, but it's the absolute cutting edge of modern neuropharmacology.
Yeah, today we are exploring a substance known as 5-MeO-DMT.
Right, which some people have actually dubbed the God
The
molecule.
God molecule, yeah.
Yeah.
And to guide you through this, we're pulling from a massive, incredibly detailed July 2026 Pillar Review.
From the OTW Journal, right?
Right. The piece is titled 5-MeO-DMT, The Neuroscience of the God Molecule, 5-HT1A, and the Whiteout.
It's a dense paper, but so important.
It is. And our mission for this deep dive is to basically synthesize all this complex neuroscience.
And, separate the swirling modern mythology from the actual hard clinical pharmacology.
Exactly. We need to understand both the staggering clinical promise and the very real physical dangers of this molecule.
Because the stakes are incredibly high
We
here.
really are, because frankly, the central mystery we are unpacking for you today is this: how does deleting the self actually cure the self?
That is the defining question, isn't it?
Right.
When we look at the clinical data emerging right now, we see a therapeutic intervention that defies almost every standard model of psychiatric care we have.
It completely throws it out the window.
Yeah, it really forces us to question our preconceived notions about what a medicine is even supposed to do.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if we're going to understand how deleting the self cures the self, we first have to understand what it actually feels like to be deleted.
We have to start with the phenomenology.
Right. And to really grasp 5-MeO-DMT, we have to contrast it with its, incredibly famous chemical cousin,
Classic DMT.
classic DMT. So walk us through that.
Well, the structural relationship between these two molecules is fascinating because it's so incredibly slight on paper.
Like almost identical, right?
Exactly. So 5-MeO-DMT stands for 5-methoxy-N,N-dimethyltryptamine.
That is a mouthful.
It is. And in the clinical development literature, you'll actually increasingly see it referred to by its generic pharmaceutical name, which is mebufotenin.
Mebufotenin. Okay, got it.
But structurally, it is just a methoxylated analog of DMT.
What does that actually mean, though, for, someone looking at a model of it?
It means it simply adds a single methoxy group. So that's an oxygen atom bound to a methyl group.
Okay.
And it adds that at the 5 position of the indole ring of the baseline DMT molecule.
So if you're looking at a 3D model of the molecule, it's just one tiny architectural tweak, right?
One tiny addition.
Just adding one little chemical balcony to the side of the structure.
Yeah, a microscopic tweak. But it completely inverts the human experience.
Which is wild, because if you're familiar with classic DMT,
Which Dr. Rick Strassman famously called the spirit molecule.
right, the spirit molecule, it's renowned for these richly visual, incredibly immersive
Oh,
dreamscapes.
yeah. People report being blasted into these, like, kaleidoscopic worlds.
Right, encountering complex hyperdimensional architectures.
And interacting with sentient, autonomous entities.
Aliens, elves, whatever you want to call them.
Exactly. It's basically an explosion of visual and narrative data.
Right, so if classic DMT is like putting on a virtual reality headset that immerses you in this wildly complex, hyper-colorful IMAX movie,
Right.
5-MeO-DMT isn't a movie at all.
Not even close.
The OOTW Journal piece is very clear about this. Despite being a direct chemical cousin, 5-MeO-DMT produces few to no visuals.
It's the exact opposite.
Yeah, instead of throwing open a door to a kaleidoscopic world, it's like unplugging the projector entirely.
Just ripping the cord out.
Right, and just staring at the pure, blinding white light of the bulb.
Yeah.
There's no movie, there's no theater, and there's no audience.
The clinical literature describes this specific phenomenon as the whiteout.
The whiteout.
Yeah, 5-MeO-DMT basically dissolves the visual field entirely.
Who's gone?
Gone. It dissolves the perception of having a physical body.
Wow.
And most profoundly, it dissolves the entire sense of being a distinct self.
It just replaces all of that with a formless, all-encompassing white light.
Or what a lot of patients and research subjects describe as a void.
A void. And this isn't just, poetic language from underground ceremonies, right?
No, not at all.
The source material highlights that researchers use validated psychological scales to measure this objectively.
Yes, tools like the 5D-ASC.
Which is the Altered States of Consciousness Rating Scale, right?
Exactly. And according to those validated scales, 5-MeO-DMT triggers exceptionally high ratings of what researchers term oceanic boundlessness.
Oceanic boundlessness. That's a powerful phrase.
It really is.
Yeah.
It induces a state of pure non-duality and triggers the most complete ego dissolution observed in the entire pharmacopoeia.
The entire pharmacopoeia.
Yeah. For those of you fascinated by the hard problem of consciousness.
You know, the question of how physical matter generates subjective experience.
Right. This is a critical data point. The source cites a landmark 2025 paper from Oxford.
Published in the journal Neuroscience of Consciousness, yeah.
Where that paper frames the 5-MeO-DMT state as a pharmacological model for deconstructed consciousness.
Deconstructed consciousness.
It is the ultimate instantaneous collapse of the self model.
So your brain simply stops running the background software that generates the illusion of you.
That's a perfect way to put it.
But hang on, let me make sure I'm wrapping my head around this paradox because it's a big one.
Oh, okay.
If the describer is completely subtracted from the experience,
right.
If the you that forms memories is just turned off, how does a person even remember or integrate this experience after the fact?
It's a great question.
I mean, if there's no audience in the theater, who remembers staring at the projector bulb?
Well, that pushes us right into the nature of memory and state-dependent consciousness.
Okay, break that down for us.
When the self-model collapses, the autobiographical self goes offline.
So that's the part of your brain that records linear narratives. Like, I went here, I saw this entity, I did this.
Exactly. So patients rarely come back with a story.
There's no plot.
Right. Instead, the memories they bring back are intensely effective. They're emotional.
Oh, I see.
They remember the sheer emotional resonance of the void. They remember the feeling of vastness, or sometimes the stark primal terror of the dissolution.
Which is then followed by a supreme peace, usually.
Very often, yes. So integration isn't about deciphering symbols or unpacking a narrative dream.
Like it might be with, say, ayahuasca or psilocybin.
Exactly. Yeah. With this, it's about reconciling that raw feeling of absolute infinite boundlessness with the sudden, jarring return to a limited physical body.
Returning to a body that has a name, a job, and a history.
Right. It's a profound transition.
So it's purely an emotional imprint. That is wild.
It truly is.
But to even begin to understand how a single molecule unplugs the projector of human consciousness.
We have to look under the hood.
Yeah, we have to look at the brain's hardware. How does adding a single methoxy group completely change the channel from an IMAX movie to a whiteout?
Well, to understand the physical mechanism, we have to examine the brain's serotonin receptors.
Oh, okay.
Like all classic psychedelics, LSD, psilocybin, mescaline, DMT, 5-MeO-DMT is a serotonergic agonist.
So its chemical shape acts like a key that fits into the serotonin receptor locks in your brain.
Precisely. Activating them.
Right.
And for almost all those classic psychedelics, it is specifically the 5-HT2A receptor that is believed to drive the core effects.
The 5-HT2A receptor, that's the one that drives the visual hallucinations and the neuroplasticity?
That is the consensus model, yes. So the 2A receptor is basically the engine.
The engine that makes a psychedelic.
Exactly. But here is the critical differentiator for 5-MeO-DMT.
Okay, lay it on us.
While it does bind to that 2A engine, it has an unusually high affinity for a totally different receptor.
Which one?
The 5-HT1A receptor.
Yeah. And this also gets very specific with the binding data here, and I think it's crucial for you listening to truly grasp the massive scale of this difference.
The numbers are staggering.
They are. So in pharmacology, they measure binding affinity using what's called a chi value.
Right.
Now think of a chi value like molecular magnetism.
That's a good analogy.
At 907 nanomolar, which is its chi value for the 5-HT2A receptor 5-MeO-DMT, has a relatively weak passing handshake with that receptor.
It binds, but loosely.
Right. But for the 5-HT1A receptor, its key value is roughly 3 nanomolar.
Which is a massive difference.
It's like a neodymium magnet violently snapping into place.
Yeah.
Because the lower the number, the stronger the magnetic grip.
That differential is just, it's staggering. We are talking about roughly a 300-fold selectivity for the 1A receptor over the 2A receptor.
300-fold.
Yes. When this molecule enters the brain, it overwhelmingly prefers to dock at 1A.
But it doesn't just stop there, does it?
No. It's a remarkably busy molecule. The literature shows it also engages 5-HT3, 5, 6, and 7 receptors.
Wow.
Plus dopamine D1 and D3 receptors, alpha-2 adrenergic receptors, and sigma-1 receptors.
So it is flooding a vast array of neurological systems simultaneously.
It's a systemic cascade, yes.
And we also have to factor in how the body processes it, right? Because the text mentions it gets metabolized.
Yes, this is a key point. The primary parent molecule, 5-MeO-DMT, is rapidly O-dimethylated by a liver enzyme.
CYP2D6, I think it was called?
Exactly, CYP2D6. And that enzyme breaks it down into an active metabolite known as bufotenin.
Bufotenin? Okay, and why does that matter?
Because bufotenin actually has about a 10-fold higher affinity for the 5-HT2A receptor than the parent molecule does.
Wait, really?
Yes. So the pharmacological profile is dynamically shifting in real time as your body breaks the drug down.
So it's shifting from a 1A dominant state initially to a slightly more 2A heavy state as the minutes tick by. That is a lot of dense biochemistry, but here is why this matters to you, the listener.
What's fascinating here is how the OATW journal piece connects these microscopic magnetic binding values directly to that massive, terrifying subjective whiteout.
Right, exactly.
That 300-fold bias toward the 5-HT1A receptor, what neuroscientists refer to as the 5-HT1A tilt,
right,
is widely hypothesized to be the exact mechanism that strips away the visual geometry.
Okay, how does that actually work, though?
Well, the 5-HT1A receptor is an inhibitory receptor.
Inhibitory.
It's so heavily clustered in areas like the Okafi nuclei and the brainstem and throughout the limbic system, which manages our emotions and memories.
So while the 2A receptor is acting like an engine trying to drive the core psychedelic experience,
the overwhelming 1A activation acts as a massive dampener on the cortical networks.
Wait, let me stop you there and make sure I'm visualizing this correctly.
Sure.
It's essentially ignoring the psychedelic engine and slamming on this 1A receptor.
Right.
But if 1A is an inhibitor, it's not adding a new layer of visuals. It's actively suffocating the part of my brain that creates the visuals and the sense of self.
Precisely. You are effectively suffocating the default mode network.
The DMN. The network of interacting brain regions that constructs your ongoing sense of self and your autobiographical narrative.
Exactly. You aren't just steering the vehicle of consciousness into a different type of visual landscape.
We're just crashing it.
Kind of. The overwhelming 1A activation is turning off the power steering, shutting down the dashboard lights, and ripping out the navigation system all at once.
While the 2A engine is still revving.
Yes. The engine is still causing intense neural activity and plasticity deep in the brain.
But the 1A activation inhibits the brain's ability to organize that chaotic activity into a coherent self-narrative or a visual scene.
Exactly. Hence, the formless whiteout.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It is incredible to think that the profound mystical difference between seeing intricate fractal entities and seeing a formless void.
It all comes down to molecular binding affinities at the nanometer scale.
Just magnets in the brain. It's an engine revving without a chassis to hold it. That is honestly terrifying.
It's a profound biological event.
And this brings us to another defining characteristic of 5-MeO-DMT, which is the sheer violent speed of this engine.
Right, the pharmacokinetics.
Let's talk about the pharmacokinetic sprint.
When evaluating any psychoactive substance, the kinetics, the precise timeline of how fast it enters the brain and how fast it leaves, are just as critical as which receptors it targets.
Yeah, timing is everything.
And with 5-MeO-DMT, when it is inhaled or vaporized, the onset hits the user within seconds.
Literally seconds.
Yeah.
You inhale, and before you can even exhale, reality is gone.
The peak of the experience arrives incredibly rapidly, usually settling in between 8 to 15 minutes.
That fast.
And then the offset, the return to a functional baseline state of consciousness, happens in roughly 30 to 45 minutes.
I really want you listening to visualize that timeline.
It's extreme.
It really is. If you take a classic psychedelic like LSD or a high dose of psilocybin mushrooms, you have a multi-hour arc.
You know, an 8 to 12 hour journey sometimes.
Right. You ingest it, you have an hour or two of gradual onset where the walls just start to breathe a little.
A long, sustained plateau.
And a slow, winding descent back to reality. It's like climbing a mountain where you get to adjust to the altitude step by careful step.
But with inhaled 5-MeO-DMT, there's practically no on-ramp.
It's not a hike?
No.
It's a neurological skydive where the plane door opens and you are just suddenly in free fall without a parachute.
That rapid kinetic arc is an immense biological shock.
I can imagine.
Our brains fundamentally rely on predictive coding.
Meaning we constantly generate subconscious predictions about what is going to happen in the next millisecond.
Exactly, to keep us oriented and safe. When a compound completely dissolves, The network's responsible for that predictive coding in under 10 seconds.
The brain's orientation system just fails catastrophically.
Yes. That extreme speed is exactly what contributes to the massive intensity the text mentions.
And it's heavily correlated with the potential for terrifying panic responses, right?
Very much so. When the self-model collapses in 10 seconds, the ego doesn't have time to negotiate, process, or prepare.
It simply shatters.
It shatters.
Which sounds, frankly, like psychological trauma.
It can be, if unsupported.
But you read this OOTW journal piece, and this exact pharmacokinetic sprint, the very thing that makes it so jarring and potentially terrifying, is exactly what makes it so incredibly appealing to multi-billion dollar pharmaceutical companies.
It highlights a major logistical bottleneck in modern psychiatric medicine.
Because the psychiatric field is desperate for rapid-acting, highly effective treatments for depression.
Absolutely desperate. Traditional SSRI antidepressants take weeks or even months to build up to efficacy.
If they even work at all.
Right. And on the other hand, traditional psychedelic therapy using psilocybin or MDMA requires an 8-hour clinic day.
The constant supervision of two highly trained therapists, a dedicated room.
Massive clinical overhead.
But a compound that induces profound neuroplasticity and total ego dissolution, yet gets the patient entirely back to baseline in 45 minutes.
From a clinical, logistical, and economic standpoint, that speed is the holy grail.
And that brings us to the clinical horizon. Let's look at the actual data, because these companies are using pure synthetic mebufotenin to try and treat the untreatable.
And they're getting results that almost look like typos.
Truly. The source material focuses heavily on two major pharmaceutical programs, both targeting treatment-resistant depression, or TRD.
This is a crucial distinction. TRD means these patients have already failed to respond to multiple traditional therapies.
They are the hardest cases to treat.
Exactly. So first, there is GH Research with a proprietary compound called GH001.
Which is an inhaled formulation of 5-MeO-DMT.
Correct. They recently concluded a phase 2B randomized placebo-controlled trial, and it met its primary endpoint spectacularly.
The numbers here are wild, so let's walk through them carefully. They measured the severity of depression using what's called the MADRS scale.
The Montgomery-Åsberg Depression Rating Scale.
Right. What is that exactly?
It's a standard, highly validated clinical diagnostic tool. A clinician asks a series of questions to quantify the severity of depressive episodes.
Looking at things like sadness, inner tension, sleep, appetite, and suicidal thoughts.
Yes. The higher the score, the more severe the depression.
Okay, so at day 8, after receiving the treatment, the patients given GH001 showed a placebo-adjusted MADRS reduction of negative 15.5 points.
Which is huge.
Furthermore, they saw a 57.5% full remission rate at day 8, compared to 0% for the placebo group.
But it gets better.
It does. In the open-label extension phase of the trial, 77.8% of the patients who completed it were still in remission at 6 months.
To translate these numbers into human terms, a 15.5-point drop on the ABR scale is a biological miracle for treatment-resistant patients.
It's life-changing.
That is the difference between a patient being entirely bedbound, consumed by hopeless rumination, and that same patient waking up, making breakfast, and feeling a genuine sense of forward momentum.
Seeing over half the trial participants achieve full remission in just 8 days is virtually unheard of with conventional pharmacotherapy.
It really is unprecedented.
And GH Research isn't the only one finding this. There is a second major player mentioned in the review.
Yes, Beckley Psytech, working in partnership with Abilitai Life Sciences.
They're developing a compound called BPL-003.
Now, this is an intranasal formulation mebufotenin benzoate, so it's a nasal spray rather than an inhaler.
Right. And their phase 2B trial showed that an 8-milligram dose yielded a negative 12.1 MADRS reduction at day 29.
Also a fantastic result.
They're currently advancing that exact 8-milligram dose into large-scale phase 3 trials.
The clinical signal across these different delivery methods is undeniably strong.
But observing the clinical effect is only half the battle, right?
Exactly. To truly understand this, we need to look at the mechanism of action.
Why is a 15-minute journey into a formless void curing months or years of entrenched depression?
The preclinical mouse models cited in the text provide the underlying biological blueprint.
Right, the animal data.
A single dose of 5-MeO-DMT drives rapid structural neuroplasticity in the brain.
The text mentions increased dendritic spine density in the frontal cortex that persists for an entire month.
Yes.
As well as cell proliferation in the ventral dentate gyrus. Now, we promise not to throw jargon at you without explaining it. What does that actually mean?
Let's visualize it. The structural growth we are seeing is driven by intracellular 5-HT2A receptors engaging very specific molecular cascades.
Primarily the BDNF, TRKB, and MTOR pathways.
Yes. BDNF stands for brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
Right. I've heard people call BDNF fertilizer for the brain, but I feel like that doesn't really capture the mechanics of what's happening.
It's an overused cliche.
Yeah.
Don't just think of BDNF as fertilizer. Think of it as a biological construction crew.
A construction crew. Okay.
A severely depressed brain is like a city where all the bridges between vital neighborhoods have collapsed.
So communication gets trapped in dark, isolated, repetitive loops.
Exactly. When 5-MeO-DMT binds to those internal 2A receptors, it sends an emergency signal that unleashes BDNF.
And that construction crew rushes in and lays down scaffolding.
Yes. Forcing neurons to physically extend new branches. These are the dendritic spines.
It physically rebuilds the bridges, reconnecting the city in a matter of days.
The brain structurally rewires itself to escape the physical rut of depression.
So what does this all mean? The numbers are amazing. The BDNF construction crew sounds incredible.
Right.
But I have to bring some heavy skepticism here because the OOTW Journal piece explicitly includes a major caveat about functional unblinding in these commercial trials.
It's a massive issue.
Are we entirely sure these trials aren't just measuring a massive post-psychedelic afterglow?
It's a valid concern.
I mean, can we truly infer that because a mouse grew some dendritic spines, it guarantees long-term human clinical benefit? Or is the pharmaceutical industry jumping the gun and riding a hype wave?
That skepticism is entirely warranted, and functional unblinding is perhaps the single most massive hurdle in all of modern psychedelic research.
Let's look at how a double-blind clinical trial works, just to clarify.
Sure. Neither the patient nor the administering clinician is supposed to know if the patient received the active drug or an inert placebo.
Because this controls for the placebo effect.
Right. But you can't double-blind the void.
No. If you are in a trial and you receive an inhaler that completely dissolves your ego and blasts you into an infinite white light in 15 seconds.
And the person in the bed next to you receives a placebo inhaler that tastes like saline and does absolutely nothing.
You both instantly know who got the active drug.
Precisely. The expectation effect, the massive placebo response, fueled by the sheer hope of finally finding a cure, skyrockets the moment the patient realizes they are having a psychedelic experience.
The blinding is functionally broken instantly.
Furthermore, while the structural neuroplasticity, the spine growth in mice, is proven, observable fact under a microscope.
Assuming that directly translates to the complex psychological remission of human psychiatric illness is a vast inference.
It's a highly logical inference backed by strong early data, but an inference nonetheless.
We have to remember that as of July 2026, 5-MeO-DMT is not an FDA-approved treatment.
No, it is not.
These are commercially sponsored trials funded by entities with a massive financial vested interest in their success.
The promise is astronomical, but the reality of proving it is complicated.
And nowhere is the reality more complicated and terrifying than when we talk about safety.
Yes.
Because, wait. If this drug completely shuts off the ego's protective mechanisms and rewires the physical structure of the brain in 15 minutes?
The sheer biological force required to do that must be incredibly volatile.
You can't just flip the brain's main breaker switch without massive electrical kickback.
Exactly.
What happens when this goes wrong? This brings us to the dark side, the real risks, and the shadow of serotonin syndrome.
The OOTW piece draws a very stark line here, and it is a line of life and death.
Let's get into it.
In controlled, medically monitored clinical trials, pure synthetic 5-MeO-DMT has shown a surprisingly manageable acute safety profile.
Like, there were no serious adverse events in the double-blind phase of the G8001 trial.
Right. But outside the clinic, in unregulated recreational or underground ceremonial settings, it is highly dangerous.
And the primary danger isn't just having a bad trip or a panic attack.
No, it's a very specific, easily triggered metabolic bottleneck.
To understand this, you need to know how the body cleans up the mess after the drug is administered.
5-MeO-DMT is cleared from your system primarily by a metabolic enzyme called MAOA.
MAOA. This is the critical failure point.
Monoamine oxidase A is the enzyme responsible for breaking down serotonin and certain other neurotransmitters in the brain.
It is the cleanup crew.
Exactly. And because 5-MeO-DMT relies almost entirely on this specific enzyme to be deactivated and cleared from your bloodstream.
Anything that inhibits MAOA creates a massive, potentially fatal interaction hazard.
Think of the MAOA enzyme like the exhaust pipe on a car engine.
Right. If you take 5-MeO-DMT while you have an MAOI, a monoamine oxidase inhibitor in your system.
So like putting a brick over the exhaust pipe while simultaneously flooring the accelerator.
The engine is redlining, but the system can't vent the pressure.
It overheats and explodes.
And the grim reality of that explosion is a condition called serotonin syndrome.
Yes. And in the real world, many people unknowingly ingest MAOIs.
For instance, the harmala and beta-carboline alkaloids found in ayahuasca brews.
Or Syrian rue. They are highly potent MAOIs.
If someone takes 5-MeO-DMT while those alkaloids are still active in their system.
Or if they combine it with common prescription SSRI or SNRI antidepressants.
They create that fatal bottleneck.
The brain is violently flooded with a potent serotonin agonist, and the cleanup crew has been locked out of the building.
What does serotonin syndrome actually look like if someone triggers it?
It is physically devastating. It causes severe hyperthermia.
Dangerously high body temperatures that can actually cook internal organs.
Exactly. It causes profound muscle rigidity, severe agitation, tremors, and massive cardiovascular strain.
If not treated rapidly with medical intervention, it can easily be fatal.
The source is chillingly clear on this point. Fatalities have occurred in unregulated settings.
Often these tragedies stem from exactly what we just described. MAOI combinations or unscreened cardiac events.
The source also notes deaths resulting from the mismanagement of benzodiazepines.
Right, where an underground facilitator tries to calm down a panicking user by injecting or administering a benzo,
leading to severe respiratory depression.
Even pure 5-MeO-DMT causes transient tachycardia, a rapid heart rate, and elevated blood pressure on its own.
Which is precisely why the clinical trials require such rigorous medical screening.
A clinical team checks for all serotonergic medications.
They take a thorough cardiac history. They screen for personal or family history of psychosis or schizophrenia.
And they constantly monitor vital signs with an EKG during the session.
If you are outside a clinic, without a pharmacologist or an emergency medical team, navigating these biochemical bottlenecks is essentially playing Russian roulette with your nervous system.
It honestly begs the question of how users can possibly navigate this safely in the wild.
It's incredibly risky.
But drug interactions aren't the only risk outside the clinic. The very source of the street-level drug carries its own chaotic dangers.
And honestly, a massive, glaring ethical dilemma.
The regulatory and ecological Wild West surrounding this molecule is exactly what makes its future so precarious. We need to talk about the toad paradox.
The ecological and ethical dimension of 5-MeO-DMT is deeply troubling.
It highlights a massive blind spot in the psychedelic community, doesn't it?
It does. When we look at the primary natural source of this molecule, we are looking at the Sonoran Desert Toad.
Scientifically known as Incilius alvarius.
Though it was formerly classified as Bufo alvarius.
Right. And the toad has these large paratoid glands behind his eyes and on its legs that secrete a venom.
And this venom contains roughly 15% to 25% 5-MeO-DMT by volume.
But, and this is a massive, but it is not pure. It is a crude biological cocktail.
The venom also contains bufotin and, more alarmingly, highly cardiotoxic compounds called bufadienolides.
Bufadienolides. This crude mixture makes dosing inherently unpredictable.
You don't know the precise concentration of 5-MeO-DMT in any given batch of dried venom.
So the risk of overdosing and panic is vastly higher.
But more importantly, you are simultaneously ingesting bufadienolides, which are cardiac glycosides.
They put massive direct stress on the heart muscle.
Yes, the pure synthetic molecule does not carry these specific cardiotoxins.
And beyond the direct physical danger to the user, there is a massive unfolding conservation crisis here.
The OOTW piece notes that tens of thousands of people have sought out these Bufo ceremonies since around 2015.
Driven by a surge of media attention, mostly, but there is no captive breeding pipeline to supply this demand.
None whatsoever. The market is supplied almost entirely by wild-harvested venom.
And we must consider the basic biology of the animal. The toad only secretes this venom under extreme duress, right?
Right. It is an evolutionary defense mechanism against predators.
Overmilking these toads drains their reserves and leaves them completely defenseless against predators in the wild.
Furthermore, the constant unregulated human capture and handling of wild populations has been heavily linked to the spread of the chytrid fungus,
which is a devastating pathogen that is currently decimating amphibian populations globally.
The herpetologists and conservationists cited in the text state it unequivocally, without any gray area.
There is no ethical way to milk wild toads, period.
And this brings us to a critical contradiction, a profound irony in modern wellness culture.
The naturalistic fallacy.
Exactly. There is a deeply entrenched assumption that a natural product is inherently safer, holier, or more aligned with deep healing than a chemical synthesized in a sterile lab.
But in the case of 5-MeO-DMT, the natural product is measurably, objectively more dangerous to the human heart.
And harvesting it is ecologically devastating.
I just have to pause on this because the irony is baffling.
It really is.
So a wellness community that often preaches deep ecological connection, oneness with the earth, and spiritual harmony
is actively pushing a fragile desert species toward ecological collapse just to achieve a temporary mystical state.
Exactly. When the lab-made synthetic version is chemically identical to the active ingredient, completely lacks the heart-stopping bufadenolides, and leaves the toads entirely alone.
It's hard to justify.
Isn't the lab-made synthetic ethically and medically vastly superior here?
From a pharmacological and conservation standpoint, it absolutely is. The synthetic imperative is incredibly strong with this specific molecule.
A pure synthetic provides precise dose control, sidesteps the cardiotoxins entirely, and eliminates the conservation harm.
It forces the community to question its own biases about what the word natural actually means when it collides with mass demand.
Oh, and before we move on, I want to quickly debunk a historical myth the article brought up because it directly relates to this quest for natural sources.
The Yopo snuff myth.
Yes. Some people claim that traditional South American Yopo snuffs, which are made from the seeds of the anadin and thera tree, are a rich historical source of 5-MeO-DMT.
It is a very common misconception in psychedelic anthropology.
But modern chemical analysis shows that those traditional snuffs are primarily composed of bufotenin, with only trace, barely pharmacologically relevant amounts of 5-MeO-DMT.
The true documented traditional history of massive 5-MeO-DMT use is actually quite sparse compared to the rich lineages of ayahuasca or psilocybin mushrooms.
So if we look at the big picture, we have an incredibly potent molecule with massive clinical promise for depression,
extreme metabolic risks,
and an underground scene driving an ecological crisis. How on earth does the government attempt to regulate all this?
That connection brings us straight to the legal landscape in 2026.
The regulatory hesitancy we are seeing is palpable.
And honestly, when you understand the pharmacology, the sheer speed, and the MAOI risks we just discussed, the government's caution makes logical sense.
Under U.S. federal law, 5-MeO-DMT is a Schedule I-controlled substance.
That categorization means the DEA considers it to have no currently accepted medical use and treatment in the United States and a high potential for abuse.
But the nuance at the state level is what's truly fascinating.
Yes.
You might assume that with the wave of psychedelic decriminalization sweeping various municipalities and states across the country, 5-MeO-DMT would just be swept up in the momentum.
But it's not.
The source explicitly points out that it is purposefully excluded from progressive state frameworks. Take Colorado's Proposition 122, for example, which passed a few years ago.
Colorado's Proposition 122 created a framework for access to psilocybin, psilocin, classic DMT, ibogaine, and mescaline.
But it explicitly, carefully excluded 5-MeO-DMT.
Why? Because state regulators and lawmakers consulted with pharmacologists.
They recognized the unique intensity of the whiteout, the specific cardiovascular strain, and the fatal MAOI bottleneck risks we've outlined today.
You simply can't treat it like a psilocybin mushroom where someone can safely sit in a room with an eye mask.
It requires a fundamentally different safety paradigm.
Even at the federal level, things are moving, but with extreme caution.
The source mentions that on April 18, 2026, there was a federal executive order directing the FDA and DEA to accelerate psychedelic research broadly across the board.
But crucially, it did not legalize or reschedule any substance.
It is a directive to study the science faster, not a directive to prescribe the drug.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean for the future? I look at this legal framework, and I look at the clinical data we discussed from GH research, and I see a glaring paradox.
It's a massive contradiction.
If this synthetic molecule is showing up to a 77.8% remission rate for severe treatment-resistant depression in clinical trials, doesn't maintaining its Schedule I status actively contradict the DEA's own definition of no accepted medical use?
How long can they hold that line?
Exactly.
That paradox is the central tension defining the current era of psychedelic medicine.
The clinical efficacy data is vastly outpacing the slow-moving regulatory framework.
But the regulators are looking at the serotonin syndrome fatalities in the underground. They are looking at the extreme kinetic shock of the compound, and they are rightly terrified of what happens if it escapes a tightly controlled, medically monitored model.
The transition from Schedule I to a broadly prescribable medicine requires unassailable proof, not just of efficacy, but of safety across a massive, diverse population.
We are trapped in that painful, cautious transitional period right now.
Okay, we have covered an immense amount of ground today. Let's synthesize this journey for you, the listener.
5-MeO-DMT is the ultimate pharmacological paradox.
On one hand, it offers the ultimate deconstruction of the ego, the terrifying, boundary-dissolving whiteout. And it offers unparalleled, rapid clinical promise for the most stubborn forms of depression.
On the other hand, it carries severe cardiovascular and metabolic risks.
A fatal bottleneck when combined with MAOIs.
And a heavy, devastating ecological toll if you source it from the wild toad instead of the lab.
The core takeaway here is that knowledge is fiercely protective.
Whether you are tracking pharmaceutical stocks and clinical trials, studying mental health innovations, or personally exploring the frontiers of consciousness, the lesson of 5-MeO-DMT is that extreme potential requires extreme precision and respect.
This isn't a casual recreational experience.
The most complete ego death in the pharmacopoeia carries the least forgiving biological risks. Biochemistry simply does not forgive ignorance.
And as we close out this deep dive, I want to leave you with one final concept to mull over on your own.
Building on the source's findings on neuroplasticity and ego dissolution.
We talked about how a single dose triggers rapid neuroplasticity, summoning that BDNF construction crew to rewire the brain and escape depression entirely by dissolving the self model for just 15 minutes.
It's a profound reset.
If completely dissolving the self model for just 15 minutes can structurally rebuild the brain and put severe treatment-resistant depression into remission for months, what does that tell us about the fundamental nature of human suffering?
It's a big question.
Is it possible that our rigid, everyday sense of self, our constant autobiographical narrative of who we are and what we've lost, is actually the most biologically expensive and fragile construct our brain maintains?
Perhaps deep mental healing isn't about fixing the ego, but simply proving to the brain that it's safe to turn it off for a little while.
Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.